And welcome back to Breakthrough Thinking. This is Greg Isaac filling in for Dave Isaac. And we had our Click and Brick Confidential with Scott Sakoff, Tony Barrett, and a special thanks to Richard Cullen for calling in. You can visit his website, 20at60.com. That's 20at60.com. Mm-hmm. And now it's time for our real estate update panel. We have Terry Cass joining us from Cast and Long Commercial Group, as well as Chris Gray from American Financial Lending. Ken McCormick should be back in studio next month. Guys, how are you doing today?
Doing great. Good to see you.
Phenomenal. It's good to see you too, Terry, and nice to meet you, Chris. And Terry, what are we going to be talking about today?
What I thought we would do is, since we've got residential finance in here, we're going to walk kind of the audience on a complete deal from start to finish, and we're going to talk about all the aspects that involved that a broker does for the buyer and the seller, and how the bank, the lender, is involved in the entire process. And then this, I don't think we've ever done this before, so it'll give your audience a really good idea of what's involved in a deal, what's going to be required, all the way from how I identify a property for a certain buyer and how I work for the seller and how I work with the bank.
Oh, okay.
Because without the bank, we ain't buying the property.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. The good thing is, and it'll get explained by Chris, is that it's a little easier today, I'm assuming, to get a loan than it was a year or two ago.
Yeah, that's correct. Everybody's pretty much got it figured out now that the lenders want to actually know what you're saying is accurate, correct, complete, and will remain that way for at least as long as they can figure out.
Good. And I can vouch because I think I'm involved in 3 or 4 escrows right now, and all of them are being purchased with a loan. A year ago, I think I did all cash deals.
Yeah, I don't blame you. That was
not good
time. Year's gone.
Yeah, right. So I'm jazzed that things are getting much better. So
that's good, yeah. So it's a time now where if you go in for a loan, there's a chance you'll get approved?
There's a really good chance you'll get approved. I have not had a denial yet. I mean, Chris will explain.
Yeah.
The buyer's still got to qualify.
That's correct.
And you're going to touch on a little bit, even a buyer with difficulties can qualify.
That's
you're going to talk about, right?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, so we'll get a little into that. He's going to, once he explains what's the process for the app, he's going to explain kind of, because what do we have, short sales, late payments, you can go into all the...
Right. Anymore, actually, if you have had some sort of hardship and you did have to short sale a property and you actually maintain your payments in a timely fashion, you can close pretty much simultaneously on a purchase simultaneously with the closing of your short sale.
Really?
So, yeah. And it's kind of a thing where everybody's been trying to, lenders and the secondary market have been trying to figure out how to lend to people in a bind and, you know, put people in homes even after having a short sale. So what the programs they put together now allow you to close on a purchase after having a short sale.
Simultaneously or even right at, I mean, literally if you had to give up your home in a short sale, you're selling your house for less than the loan amount.
Okay, so a quick scenario. I actually just closed. I had a client that was married and she was self-employed and her husband had a W-2 job and they got divorced for whatever their reasons were, and also at the same time, over the last couple of years, the market has declined, and so her self-employment, she went and took a job as a W-2 employee. So we income qualified her as a W-2 employee, and her hardship was enough of that. The lender agreed to allow her to short sale her property, and so then upon short selling her property, she had found a home to buy, and we closed her purchase the day that her short sale closed.
Wow, and the lending bank on the second property had no problem.
That's correct. And, I mean, all that has to be disclosed, but that's okay. I mean, she had a realistic hardship. She was, you know, her self-employment it fizzled out, so she got a W-2 job, worked at that, you know, and like I say, her hardship. So the bank that owned her current mortgage was like, yeah, she's had a hardship. She's divorced. Half her income's gone. You know, she no longer can afford the property. So instead of, you know, foreclosing and, you know, eating that much of it, they decided to allow her to short sale. And again, yeah. So
that's great. Oh, okay. That's interesting because I would have never seen that a year ago.
Yeah, yes. It's like I say, it's come a long way. People are figuring out ways to get people in properties. I mean, now we have conventional loans at 97% loan to value, which was unheard of. You know, you couldn't find a mortgage company on the planet wanting to insure that.
Right.
But now you can get a conventional loan with 97% financing. They're pretty strict on the guidelines on that, but I mean, as we should have been to begin with, you know, if you're sticking your neck way out there, I mean, you want to make sure the person can actually pay for it today and with the best of your ability, make sure they can pay for it in a couple of years. So with the guidelines and debt ratios that they qualify you at, if you took a $5 or $10, depending on, you know, a $2 an hour decrease or a $10, you know, all kind of relative there, in pay, you could still afford to live in your home in 2 years. So, you know, and then you have the FHA thing where FHA allows you to go a little bit deeper. Their debt ratio stretch out a little bit farther. You know, that's, you know, for the person that, you know, doesn't have the 10 or 20% down or things like that. So, I mean, there's something for everybody out there. And I just think a lot of people really don't know that, you know, lending is actually giving money to people again, but they just want to verify that everything you're telling them is accurate. They don't want to put you into a bind because I just got off a phone call with a client. He's like, Chris, I have no clue. I have no idea what to do. I have absolutely no clue what to do. Can you please help me? And I was like, well, sure, you're not supposed to. That's not what you do. You know, you're a guy doing a completely different job. That's what I do. I'll walk you through it. And he's like, you know, thanks. And so anyway, it's not that, you know, you're ignorant to life. I mean, I don't know how to do much of anything else other than what I do. So I would expect, you know, my CPA to help me out and so on.
What about, before we get into this, because I'm curious, I have noticed banks have no mercy on investors. I have talked to banks, and as soon as you say an investor, the bank says, we don't help investors in any way. There's no loan programs. There's no refinance. You know, a lot of investors bought. They're upside down. As soon as you say it's not my personal residence, they just slam the phone down on you. Seriously, I've had it happen a lot of times.
And
when are they going to see the light on that?
You're correct, and it's really a shame because, I mean, it goes all the way back to, you know, everybody being able to be an investor. The banks allowed your average Joe, you know, to say, oh, I'm an investor and buy houses. But in that, they also said, but we're not going to help you out because you thought that you were a Joe investor.
Right.
So, and you know what? And that's still where they're at with that. And everybody hates it. And paying for it a little bit now, but, cause you could just turn around and put that back from the bank's point of view. Well, we invested in you.
Right. I understand what they're saying. Now, the other thing is, and this is by personal experience, there is a program for personal residences. If you're upside down and you're not upside down more than 20%, they can refinance you, you know, and help you get your payments down and stuff.
There are 105 and 125 programs that are out there. They are actually very difficult to qualify for.
I mean,
really dotting all your I's, crossing all your T's, and then some. There are, because again, the bank wants to know that if they're sticking their neck out one more time for you, do you actually income qualify for even that? You know, is your house for sure worth that 125%? So that's a very tough loan to get, but it is
possible.
Right, and it's the Fed's way of saying, hey, we're trying to help.
Now, I also, when I called for a client on those, again, I called and said, this is an investor house. And the guy says, I can't help you because Fannie Mae will allow these on investor homes, Freddie Mac won't. And I said, well, they're kind of the same company, but they're not. Why would one pseudo-government company allow it and one pseudo-government company not allow it?
And that's the magic question for 2 years, I mean, at least. It is crazy because the government basically owns Fannie Mae and Freddie
right.
Mac.
Pseudo. They won't admit it, but they do own it.
Right, right. But they're still following their guidelines, basically, with a little bit of the government's guidance as well. So in trying to follow the Fannie Mae, traditional Fannie Mae guidelines and traditional Freddie Mac guidelines, that's why they still remain opposites in what they'll do.
I didn't understand why one would and one wouldn't.
Yeah, it's and probably no one ever will, but you know, don't. The biggest thing is instead of just wondering, people should actually call somebody.
Right. Well,
ask.
I called the bank direct for this client, and the bank said, "Hey, we're sorry, you'd qualify under Fannie Mae, but Freddie Mac owns your loan. You're out of luck." But they said it might change.
Right.
Check
well,
with us.
Well, and that's kind of what I mean is. So, don't just sit at home and go, well, there's nothing to do.
No, there's a lot to do. I agree.
Right, yeah.
No, I was proactive. I was just frustrated.
Right.
Because there was an out, and then I found out there wasn't an out, and I'm like, these guys should be same guidelines, but they're not.
No.
So.
But anyway.
Okay.
All right. Well, when we come back from break, we'll continue on with this. We'll talk a little bit about duplexes and triplexes as well. And this is Greg Isaac filling in for Dave Isaac, Breakthrough Thinking's Real Estate Update panel. We have Chris Gray with American Financial Lending and Terry Cass with Castellon Commercial Group. If you want to give us a call, 602-296-3632. Questions for Chris and Terry. We'll be back in just a moment.
What if your house is on fire, you call 911. The firemen don't know what to do, the truck's got a flat tire, the water hose has a leak, they can't decide what to wear, and everybody wants to drive the truck. This never happens because they have a process, they follow it, they're on the same page. I'll help you put your fires out with a business process. I'm Barbara Haggerty, helping you mind your own business. 602-750-4518. Increase the bottom line now. Even a two-person business needs a process, and I specialize in small business. 602-750-4518.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor.
And welcome back to Breakthrough Thinking. This is Greg Isaac filling in for Dave Isaac today, and it's our real estate update panel. Ken McCormick from American Financial Lending is not here today, but we do have Christopher Gray with American Financial Lending, as well as Terry Cass with Castellon Commercial Group. And I'm going to hand it over to Terry Cass.
All right, so what we're going to do is kind of walk the audience through what's involved in purchasing an investment-type property. It's going to be commercial, and commercial is defined as anything more than one unit, but in the financial world, anything up to four units gets financed by a residential loan. Everything up to five units or more is a commercial loan, totally different loan. So we're going to focus on just the residential here. So basically, I think we're going to start with a fourplex, because I'm basically involved in duplexes, triplexes and fourplexes, and basically I'm going to try to talk the side from the buyer's side and then get Chris involved in what the lender is going to be involved. So case in point, I have a listing of a fourplex in Mesa, four units, Single level, nice location, totally rehabbed. I have it listed at $149,000. So we got an idea of kind of where they're at. From that point of view, I get a buyer, and either I find my own buyer or I get an agent, but they're interested in buying this fourplex. They're interested in submitting a purchase offer, and they're going to buy it with a residential loan. They're going to use Chris as his loan, what you lender. Would be called? Lender? Are you the actual lender or a mortgage broker?
We're a broker-banker, actually.
So you do both. That's so sometimes correct. You actually do your own lending. Sometimes you find lending from another source.
Correct.
Doesn't matter. Chris would be the lead guy either way.
Correct.
So it doesn't matter whether he uses his bank or another bank.
Correct.
Okay, so when we submit a purchase offer, before I would look at it, I'm using it as my listing. I don't care where the offer is coming from. Either it's my buyer or another agent, their buyer, and they want to do a loan, I am going to require an LSR. Okay, and what does LSR stand for again?
Loan status report.
Loan status report, okay. Chris is going to go into it where he's going to, before with the purchase offer, as a listing agent, I am going to require an LSR before I even look at it, especially on a loan. I'd rarely accept offers with loans without an LSR because that means it's not a serious offer. Cash, proof of funds, loan, LSR. So Chris is going to go through what is needed for an LSR, what he's going to need for an LSR, what's needed. And I'm talking about a fully completed LSR, which shows me, if you're going to be a buyer, that you are a serious buyer. If I'm going to get a partially completed LSR, which Chris has to designate what he's done, I won't accept it because I'm not going to waste my time.
And with good reason, because as we were talking earlier, in today's market, it's not your name and social, and you got a loan.
Right.
Investors want to know that you can pay for the loan today and hopefully in the future. So in that, hopefully your client will have already have come to see me for an LSR to get loan approval prior to shopping for a home, especially an investment property.
And I should have mentioned that. If you are going to be a serious buyer, even before you put a purchase offer in, whether it be a house or an investment, yeah, make sure you go to your lender and find out how much you qualify for.
Right, because that will actually get rid of a lot of the time that it takes for the property to close. If somebody has come to see me prior to looking for the home, I mean, we've eliminated, anywhere from 5 to 20 days of the process, depending on, how tough the property is going to be to close on. So they come to see me, they get an LSR, a loan status report, and to get that, I need what we call the 4 C's, which is basically the capacity, the credit, and the capital, and the collateral. So do you have a job? How long have you had the job? Is it a job that you income qualify for your current residence and to own an investment property? Are you credit worthy?
Let me go back on the qualifying, on the income. Can a self-employed do it?
And I think, as pretty much everybody is aware of anymore in today's market, if you're self-employed, the old 2 years taxes, self-employment, are required for that. But as I say, I think pretty much everybody's on board with that as investors already.
You'd be surprised how many don't know that, okay?
Right.
Okay, I'm just trying to get that.
Right, and
specific.
Right, and I get it because I'll get the people that know that, and that's why they're seeing me, and you get the people calling and shopping, and you kind of like touch base on that, and they go, oh.
Right.
But, okay, so anyway, so does the borrower have the capacity, meaning that, they have the ability, the jobs and things like that to qualify? And then in that, we'll pull their credit, and do they have the scores to qualify?
Give me a range of scores. Have they adjusted the scores at all based on what's going on, or have they not adjusted the scores
in
your experience?
They've definitely adjusted the scores. But, I mean, there are programs, all the way from private money, hard money, to traditional conventional lending. And we actually have all of those with our company.
But on a credit score, you had to be stellar, 700 to 800? Are they being more reasonable? Are 500 or 600 credit scores able to get conventional loans?
Right, and I have a borrower right now that has a 639 FICO, for instance. And when you drop to lower scores, you usually have to say something else like, okay, so you have a 639, but why? You know, is your credit all current, or do you have a 639 because, you know, you don't pay anybody? You shouldn't be borrowing lunch money. Do you have the capital? So I got a 639 FICO, but, you know, I'm 10 years on a really good job. I have 50 grand in a 401k and $50,000 somewhere else, plus the money I'm going to put down on my, you know. So I have reserves. I have assets.
Question, because I'm sure the audience is thinking about this. Money to put down, are there any changes in the rules of where you can get that money? Aren't there something to do with gifts now and whatever?
And that's continually changing as well.
Right, that's why I'm asking.
And it's almost like, hey, hey, Chris, so I have this buyer, you know, today. Can we today, get some of that money as a gift? For the most part, they like to see at least 5% of the funds coming from the borrower's own funds.
Of the entire down payment?
Correct.
That's it, just 5.
Right.
That's not bad.
You'll have a lender that's like, no, none of the money can be gift money. You know, okay. It needs to all be theirs. And again, that's like the whole, that same lender doesn't want you to have a 639 FICO. You know, that lender would like you to have a 740, your own money, everything, you know, stellar. Which then in turn you get the stellar rates. So it's all kind of relative. If you're trying to be an investor, you know, and your credit isn't the greatest because you've had issues in the past, you know, maybe you had a divorce and in that divorce you had a bankruptcy, so you just can't get that credit score up. Well, and in that actually we can help you get your credit score up as well. But anyway, you're not going to get, you know, the
low rates.
Right, the lower rates. You're going to be up there a percent and a half.
Okay, speaking of that, what are the rates today for an average conventional loan? The best. 30-year.
High fours. Again,
really? Still in the high fours?
Yeah, are we talking about a 97% loan? Are we talking about...
No, 25. Right now we're talking about investors. Investor comes in with 25% down. 75 loan to value, 650 FICO score, good track record on a job and whatever. He's buying an investment fourplex. Mm-hmm. He's current on his home. He doesn't have any dings. What's the rate if he closed today? What's he going to get?
That's going to vary on every lender. I'm not trying to skirt it, but it's going to vary on almost every single lender because there are loan level price adjustments. The secondary market keeps creating new price adjustments. So, all right, so like today, if somebody is borrowing $151,000, you know, with the scenario you just said, you're probably going to be about 5.25.
That's great. That's still good. I thought the rates went up, so 5.25 is very reasonable.
Well, with 25% down.
Okay, well, that's an investor LTV. I don't think you can go below.
Yeah, you can do 20% down.
Oh, now they're doing 20? Okay, it's changing. I'm trying to keep up with it.
And if you have a Fannie Mae owned property as an investment property, then Fannie Mae has the 10% down. But again, the secondary market has created so many price adjustments that it would be so costly to do the 10% down. You want to do the 15% Fannie Mae Home Path loan instead because it makes more sense to put your money into the house and put it down instead of just absorbing 5% of your money for.
I've never been able to get a buyer to qualify for a home path. I heard it's very tough.
Oh, no.
Cumbersome, no?
I love that loan.
Do you? Okay.
Yeah.
And then because we're all doing conventional 25% down.
There's no appraisal.
On the home path?
On the home.
And I know there's a lot of properties I bought from home path, but we just did a regular conventional loan.
I mean, if you just think of the issues that they've been having with one appraisal. Oh, we want a second appraisal. Oh, we want a third appraisal. Oh, wait, it's an appraisal review. So, I mean, a home path loan with no appraisal. I mean, you want to, as a buyer, you want the realtor and your lender to go, this house would sell for that.
Now, remember, we're not talking about houses. These type of loans available for investment property.
Right, yes.
Okay, that's what I need to qualify. Right. Okay, so go ahead with the LSR.
Okay, so We establish you have the ability, you have the credit, you have the capital, you have the collateral. Then we would do what is called a DU underwriting or an LP underwriting, depending on if we're going Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac. Get an approval from the computer. The computer says, we like you, we'll give you the loan, put it into process, and then at that point we would give it to an actual physical person to say, yep, everything they put into the computer is complete and accurate. It's just like they gave the information to the computer. Yeah, the W-2s are accurate. They calculated the numbers correctly on how much they make. Then at that point we go, okay, let's get the appraisal. And
there's a process before that, but with that LSR, you don't do anything until up to the appraisal.
Right.
There's not, once you get the LSR in, we do. I have to talk the stuff I got to do, and then we hit the appraisal.
Right. I did kind of jump. All right. Yeah. So then at that point, the LSR is complete. We have the person approved. The computer likes them. We like them. Everything we've said.
You sign off on it. You give it to the buyer or the buyer's broker, and then he submits it with the purchase offer.
Correct.
And if I call you and go, hey, which I would call the lender and go, hey, is this kosher? You've checked this guy out. He's good to go. As long as this thing appraises and whatever, you'd say, yeah, in confidence, yep, based on everything that I've talked to him and got from him, I've got to go.
Correct.
Okay. I need to know that.
That's good stuff. And you're listening to Breakthrough Thinking, the Real Estate Update panel. We have Chris Gray with American Financial Lending and Terry Cass from Cass & Long Commercial Group. And I'm Greg Isaac filling in for Dave. We'll be back in just a minute.
Hynton & Lewis is a multi-practice law firm, ideally equipped to assist with a broad range of legal and business issues in corporate and financial transactions, real estate, commercial, litigation, bankruptcy, and private client practice. Ridenour, Hynton & Lewis is a law firm that bases its practice on understanding the businesses of their clients, and they use this insight to meet each client's unique and evolving legal challenges. Call or click today, 602-254-9900. Find them on the web at rhkl-law.com.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor.
And welcome back to Breakthrough Thinking. This is Greg Isaac, once again filling in for Dave Isaac here on the Real Estate Update panel. We have Chris Gray from American Financial Lending here for Ken McCormick. And we also have Terry Cass from Cass & Long Commercial Group. And on to Terry.
Okay. Now that we understand the process of the putting in the offer and talking with your lender, I do want to mention, I was talking to the break about, I had an interesting meeting with a company called Entrust this morning, which happens to be located in the same building that Chris's company in.
Right.
And we had a good hour and a half meeting with the president and JD, I think is his name, right. JP or JD, nice guy, but that there's also a way of buying commercial real estate. Again, commercial real estate's two units above, even though it's a residential loan for four units and less, about using your retirement money, how easy it is. So I'm not going to go into a long dissertation about this, but if you're interested and you want to contact me, or I suggest you contact NTrust, they have a great system for setting up a self-directed IRA, IRA that you can basically buy real estate in, and it's just another option, a nice way of doing it.
And they hold seminars frequently for that.
Right, I just learned about that. Yeah, so I'm kind of jazzed about that option because according to him, there's about $16 trillion sitting in retirement accounts.
Baby boomers. Wow.
Yeah, losing money in the stock market that might want to think about putting a portion of that into real estate. And basically, they handle all of the reporting to the IRS, so you're okay with it. And they set up the account. It's a very easy process. And I think that's a great avenue for smaller investors to get into investing in real estate. And I'm in the, like I said, the small. You can do it with homes, too. Homes, duplexes, triplexes, fourplexes. But he was mentioning that his average investor that does this usually does about a $100,000 deal. That's exactly the average deal if you blend those three types of properties I just talked about. So another avenue. So I just wanted to mention that. All right, so we have an LSR. We have a purchase offer. You as the investor, the buyer, would submit it to the listing agent. Again, either with your own agent or use. I'm a listing agent. I can represent you as the buyer. Once I get it in, I said I usually always check with the lender. So I would call Chris, like I said, and make sure that this thing is complete and that he did get everything he needs. And then basically what I would do is just go to the seller, talk about the offer. If there's a lot of offers, you know, see which one's the best. Honestly, cash is king. And then we go down, if we've got all lender loan offers, then we want the strongest buyer with a loan. That's where the process of good LSR has the better chance to be up in front there. And like I said, I'm doing most of my deals with loans, less with cash, only because it's always better to leverage. In terms of a return, a cash-on-cash return is always going to be better with less money down than with more money down. We've talked about that in other shows.
I was just going to say, I think a lot of people, I'm seeing more of friends and family members and, you know, clients I've done business with for several years. Are starting to feel the same way. You know, initially everybody was like, oh, you know, if I'm going to invest, I'm just going to pay cash. You know, they didn't want to leverage anything.
Right.
With good reason. They'd probably been stung a little bit or heard of somebody being stung a little bit. And now they're feeling like, you know, the market's plateauing maybe just a little bit, you know, enough for them to feel comfortable with getting a loan for part of the investment.
I would recommend it if you could get it. I mean, in the market we're in, this is going to be one of the best markets we're going to see in a long time. I am not going to sit here and say it's not going to happen again because I'm too old and I've seen this happen too many times. But, I mean, when you are seeing prices that I saw back in the early 90s, I could buy property today for what I paid back in 1993 when I first started investing. You got to be crazy not to buy now.
Right.
You really, it's just an opportunity here. Properties have been devalued by 50, 60, 70, sometimes 80%. I mean, I think we're hitting bottom. I don't think we're going up yet, but I think we're not going to go down anymore. Now, this is commercial.
Right,
houses
right.
are taking a little bit of a double dip here. I don't know. I don't do houses, and I don't know how low we're going to go. I know we're at a 8 or 10 year low. I read in a report this morning. Nationwide, homes prices are the lowest they've been in the last 8 or 10 years.
Right. We are seeing some smaller areas, you know, different areas that have seem to have stopped. And, for instance, like on some of the refis I had, I, you know, did an appraisal 6 months ago. The house didn't appraise, and we were like, you know what, let's just look at it again real quick. And now they appraise.
Right. Yeah, I've had 3 appraisals in the last week, and all of them came in at 100%.
Nice.
I have never had that.
Right.
And the appraisals came in within 24 hours, which I have never seen again.
You know what? Appraisals are going a lot faster now. You're absolutely right.
Unheard of.
I had a VA appraisal. Took 17 days. We were calling VA every day going, what's up? This was like a year ago.
I had one done at 10 a.m., and I had an answer at 5 that it appraised.
Nice.
First time.
Nice.
In 3 years, I've seen that happen. Now, the other thing is it's getting tight, and I'll just, for instance, on fourplexes, on the multiple listing service, which is the realtor listing, the last 2 years, I was looking at anywhere from about 220 fourplexes on the market on average. The last, since the first of the year, it's been down to 120. And last year, I would say 40 to 50% of them were under $100,000. Now, 60 to 70% of them are on the market at over $100,000. So it's starting to move up a little. And when I'm listing, I'm starting to push my price up by another 10 or 20,000. Why? Because I could get it.
Right.
Still cash flows, still qualifies. But, the, you know, at least I'm talking about investment-type property. There's no building going on, and that means, you know, there's just going to be less inventory out there.
I think a multifamily residence is huge to have
in
your portfolio.
Yeah, I'm surprised more people, yeah, either an investor. I'm surprised a lot of first-time home buyers aren't buying a multifamily, living in it, and getting your rent, your mortgage paid.
I don't think they realize that they can buy a multifamily home as a primary residence.
Right, yeah.
Frequently, I come across, you know, different realtors, even lenders or buyers, that they have no idea that, for instance, you can get a VA loan on a multifamily property as a primary residence. Yeah. You have to, of course, live in it.
And lenders like it better when you're an owner-occupier.
Awesome.
It's much easier to get a loan.
Yeah. Well, the rent is paying your mortgage.
Right. But, I mean, lenders will be easier on you if you're owner-occupied.
Sure.
They like it that you're there, that you're going to be watching the property, fixing it up. They're much easier. I know it.
That's
if it's
absolutely
an owner-occupied.
Correct.
Yeah. So, you know, just some options for you out there. But real quick, because we are on a time limit, during the due diligence process, once you have an accepted offer, then the bank's kind of out of it until we do our physical due diligence, where a buyer is able to go ahead and inspect the whole building. And when you're talking about tenant occupied buildings, we need a 48-hour notice to get on the inside. But usually on a fourplex, we usually use about a 10-day due diligence period, and then schedule the inspection, have a professional property inspector there, get a roofer there, get an AC guy there. If you think there's issues, you bring a plumber in, you bring an electrician in, you bring whatever it is, or during the initial inspection with the property inspector. If you find issues, then sometimes you have more than enough time to bring back professionals to see if there's any bigger issues. I run across this a lot. But let's just say we get through our 10-day due diligence. You're now done with your physical due diligence period. You've checked over books and records, leases, you're happy. You've written off, the agent would submit a BINZR, which is an inspection report, either saying, hey, I take the property as is, or you need to fix these things. Again, not a big deal, but let's just say we go through the whole process. Okay, now the bank comes back in. Once you have written off these contingencies and say, I accept the deal physically, now we go to the bank and say, all right, we're ready to move forward. Now we need to order the appraisal, because now we have to take care of the financing contingency, which there's a certain amount of time involved in that.
Right.
And so now Chris comes back in.
Well, and with the appraisal, as some folks may not know, the appraisal system has changed quite a bit. It's not, you know, I don't call up, you know, my appraiser friend, or you call up your appraiser friend, or
right.
The borrower says, I want to call mine. It's actually an appraisal management company, and the system is called HVCC. So the appraisal is ordered through the appraisal management company on like duplexes, threeplexes, triplex, fourplex. Those appraisals are a little bit more costly because of it's twice the work. They have to do the rental comps and things like that. Those range somewhere from, you know, 5 to 6.25, depending if it's a duplex or a fourplex. But it typically takes 2 to 7 days for the appraiser to come out, inspect, you know, do all the things they need to do, go back, write up the appraisal, and shoot it over to us.
And I said, the process is getting quicker.
It is.
A lot.
Yeah, it is.
I'm from your end, you should be. I'm seeing it from my end.
Yeah, I'm definitely seeing the process is a lot faster.
When we go to the lender like you, when I call up and say, okay, the buyer's ready to order the appraisal, and I get a word from you that you've ordered it, 2 days I get a call from an appraiser ready to go out and inspect the property.
Right, and we will have the money. We typically get a credit card from the borrower at the time of application.
Right.
And then, you know, I'll call up the borrower and say, hey, you know, Sally, whoever, we're going to charge your credit card today for the appraisal so that they'll be aware that their card was charged today. The appraiser's going.
Right. And then what, usually they call me, the listing agent, because I have to arrange a 48-hour notice. That's why you said the 2 to 7 days. I arrange a 48-hour notice. The appraiser comes out. I got to basically get him into four units. He's got to identify that there are four units there. They're in, you know, rentable shape.
Right.
Checks to make sure they're rented. I give him copies of leases. He'll usually check the comps. He'll check the condition of the building. I've even had appraisers find issues reporting back to the bank that I've had to fix.
Right.
I don't know if a lot of buyers are aware of it. The appraiser has to if they see something obvious. Like I had one, the roof, he didn't like the roof.
Right.
And I had to replace the roof to get the deal done, which is okay. It was a 50-50 shot. The roof wasn't leaking. It looked bad.
Right.
So we threw the dice. The appraiser went back to the bank and said, everything looks good, but the roof's no good, and the bank, that was a condition the bank came back with.
Right.
So I had to replace the roof, call the lender. Lender had to resend the appraiser back. Very rare. I mean, I'm aware I would not let that happen before, and then we got it done.
Right, because obviously you being in the industry, you're quite aware that if the appraiser says this is it, underwriting's going to say, hey, fix it.
Oh, right. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's not negotiable. Again, that rarely happens. If you're a smart owner from the listing side, you're going to make sure that any obvious things are fixed.
The investors and investment properties are typically have less problems because investors know.
Yeah, and we're working with the buyer and the seller. I'm not doing this behind the buyers. I'm going, hey, you know, here's some obvious issues. I know they have to be fixed. I'm going to fix them now so before the appraiser sees them, they won't be an issue. The buyer's like, hey, that's great. I got to fix it anyway, so it actually saves him money.
Right.
Because when we don't have to pay the appraiser to go back, and they charge for that. So everybody's gung-ho, and I do that all the time.
Oh, yeah. So. Definitely. And you guys, great stuff. And you're listening to Breakthrough Thinking, the Real Estate Update Panel. Greg Isaac here filling in for Dave Isaac. We've got Chris Gray from American Financial Lending and Terry Cass from Cass & Long Commercial Group. We'll be back in just a minute.
Is it important for you to develop a financial plan without the potential conflict associated with commission sales? As a fee-only financial planner, I am paid by you and only you, my client. I'm not compensated in any way by the recommendations I provide. Have you heard the phrase, people do not plan to fail, they fail to plan? My experience has shown that this is too often true when considering one's financial future. If you're ready to take action, call me, Bob Berger, Certified Financial Planner and Certified Divorce Financial Analyst, directly at 602-235-0336. We'll discuss your financial situation and review some small or perhaps large changes that will help you obtain the financial future you desire. Don't let the lack of a plan affect your family's financial future. Call me, Bob Berger, at 602-235-0336 for a free consultation. Again, Bob Berger, Certified Financial Planner, 602-235-0336.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor.
And welcome back to Breakthrough Thinking. This is the Real Estate Update panel. Greg Isaac here, filling in for Dave Isaac. And with us, with our panel, we have Chris Gray of American Financial Lending, and of course, Terry Cass with Cass & Long Commercial Group. And Terry, looks like we're going to talk about appraisals and the steps after that.
Yeah, so all right, so we've got up to the appraisal, and let's just figure everything went right, and the appraisal came back at, you know, at or above the purchase price. It's very rare I've seen it come above. I have seen it come below, but most of the time, don't appraisers just try to substantiate the price?
They pretty much.
Right on. Mine are usually to the penny.
Actually, as of late, you know, I've been seeing some that are a couple of thousand more.
Have you? That's good.
The last a transaction I closed yesterday was actually about $12,000 more than the sales price.
Did that upset the seller?
Why
I don't figure they usually do that, because the seller's going to be upset.
Right. Well,
even they don't have to know.
And
they technically, yeah, you don't tell the seller it came in $12,000 more.
Right, because the buyer pays for the appraisal, they own it.
Yeah, you don't see the appraisal amount.
Right.
It's just, hey, qualified. It hit the amount. Yeah. Okay.
All right,
so it appraises. So the next thing is Chris would notify the agents and the buyer that it appraised. He's then going to...
At that point, like you're saying, I would notify the buyer. I would say, hey, great news. The property appraised for $12,000 more. And I would call up the seller and say, great news. The property came in at what you needed to sell the property. And then, of course, it goes into underwriting. Underwriting will review it. And in today's world, especially on an investment property, most likely it's going to go in what is called an appraisal review. So the appraisal review board is going to want to touch it and just kind of glance at it and do some automated values with some different search engines they have, just to be sure everything's cool.
Now, when it's in the underwriter, the buyer's already been approved.
Right.
So they're not reapproving the buyer.
No.
They're just checking to make all the I's are dotted, T's are crossed, all the documents are in. The appraisal review, I understand there's a lot of craziness passed with appraisal, so they're just double checking.
Right.
What's your experience been in appraisal review? Have you had many problems when it goes into there?
As of late, no.
Okay.
I'll
agree with you. I haven't seen anything come back lately. I used to have a ton come back with problems.
Right. Yeah. It was the appraisal didn't mean anything still. The appraisal review board would chew it up. But yeah, now, last few months, the appraisal review board gets it, and they're, like you just said, they're dotting the I's, crossing the T's. The address is correct.
Any conditions, they want to make sure they're met. Now, I had something happen. I don't know if you've ever had this happen. I've been in real estate since 93. I never did. I got a call from not the lender, but the person the lender was selling the loan to, that they had a problem with the deal, not the lender. The lender, it appraised, and the lender okayed the loan. But I get a call from that they're reselling in the secondary market.
Right.
I got a call from that guy and goes, I need all the backup for all the rehab you did.
Right.
I go, what?
Yeah.
There was a $20,000-$30,000 worth of rehab out of fourplex. I literally had to pull out about 100 documents and prove out every nail, every part, all the labor charges. It took me about a week. Submit it to the secondary lender, and then he okayed it, and then the deal closed.
That's
you ever seen that happen before?
No, but I totally get how that could happen, because
that's
a lender with in-house underwriting bundling up all their loans, selling them on the secondary
that's
market.
That's what happened. It was in-house.
And before they buy it, they go, whoa, wait a minute. So,
I learned something new. That said, I was the first. I was just, who are you and why are you calling me?
Yeah, that's for sure one in a thousand.
Yeah. Well, when you do enough deals, you run into that one in a thousand. So, okay, so it's in an underwriting. Everything goes good. Chris calls up and says, okay, everything's been approved. Underwriting's we're going to generate docs, right? The loan docs.
Correct. You know, so we shoot, and typically the last bit of information you give to underwriting is the insurance information, because nobody wants the insurance to start until the loan is going to close. And once the appraisal is out of review and all that's done, then we can better ascertain, okay, we are going to close on the 22nd. Let's rock. Let's get insurance.
And what is it, about 2 days, 2 to 3 days to generate closing docs?
No, not, you know, if I'm brokering it, then because you have to go in line with everybody else. But if it's something I'm doing in-house, you know, if we need it quickly, you know, I can say, hey, you know, Steve, my funder, I need this like now.
Okay.
You know, and if I've been good and he likes me, then he will.
And then the lend, once the loan docs are generated, they get sent to the title company. And the title company bundles in with all the closing, because there's a lot of other closing docs that go with the deal. Right. And then the title company will then take over.
And actually in that, what happens is the doc guy or doc person will draw up lender instructions and shoot those over to title, and then title will generate what's called a pre-audit, the HUD statement, which will end up at the end of the transaction being the final HUD.
Right.
But they'll draw up a pre-audit so that everybody can look at the numbers, make sure everybody's numbers are correct, you know, from title, lender, seller, buyers, and then shoot everybody the pre-audit so that everybody can examine that to include the investor, and then go,
then both sides look at each side, the seller side, the buyer side, make sure all the charges or whatever.
Right.
And then depending on where everybody, at least in my deals, mostly we're FedExing documents everywhere. And then once we're at the point, it closes.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, the funds get wired, you know, that you've already proved out they have the funds. So when you're to this point, it's done deal. It's very rare it falls apart.
And depending on the creditworthiness of the property or of the borrower and the collateral worthiness, the property, depending on the property type, is it a duplex or a fourplex? Sometimes, you know, maybe we'll send it to one investor or the other, and perhaps that might be an investor we can actually sign, fund, and record all in that day. And sometimes it's something where we have to order the funds, you know, 3 days prior, and it would close 3 days later after signing, or sometimes...
Yeah, usually when we, when we get all the docs in, at least the lenders I work with, they get the funds there within 24.
Right.
Yeah, they'll throw it in and go from there.
Right.
So that's pretty much the deal. Start to finish, all the parties involved, you know, good information on the lender. Yeah.
At that point, it would fund and record.
Right.
Well, that's good stuff for our listeners out there, you know, on how that works with the commercial real estate. And, guys, you want to give out your contact information? We'll start with Chris.
Sure. I'm with American Financial Lending. My office phone is 602-277-3800. I'm better reached on the weekends at my cell phone at 602-332-3414.
Okay, perfect. And that's Chris Gray with American Financial Lending Incorporated, and Terry Cass.
I'm Terry Cass. I'm with a company called the Cast and Long Commercial Group. Phone number is 602-703-5277. Or my email is Terry, T-E-R-R-Y, at klcomgroup.com. Chris, you want to give your email?
Sure. It's actually kind of long because there's so many Chris Grays in the Valley. my email is the letter C. And then my name, Chris, C-H-R-I-S-G-R-A-Y, the number 4, loans, L-O-A-N-S, at yahoo.com.
That is a long email.
Yeah. That's a good one there.
So it was all I could do to find it. I've had it for about 12 years now, so you email that, I'm going to get it.
Okay, perfect. Well, thanks, guys. And once again, you know, I'm Greg Isaac filling in for Dave. You can tune in Friday for Breakthrough Sports, as our guests include Arizona Rattlers general manager and head coach Kevin Guy, as well as the voice of the Phoenix Coyotes, Dave Strader, will join us to talk about a bunch of topics, including the ownership situation and the upcoming playoffs. Once again, this has been the Real Estate Panel. Chris Gray, American Financial Lending, thanks so much. Terry Cass, Cass and Long Commercial Group, another great show. Good information today. You can catch the podcast as well of the show on breakradioshow.com, B-R-E-A-K radioshow.com, and just go to show archives and you'll see today's show with Chris and Terry Cass. Thank you so much, guys, and we'll see everybody on Friday.
All right, thanks.